We are the story of Jericho. So, this is a... I'd be curious to see what y'all's thoughts are on Jericho. Because as a kid, we learn the story of Jericho. And we do the fun activity, or sometimes I imagine we all have at some point in time where you march around tables seven times and you get a yell in Bible class, and then you act like you get to take over Jericho. And it's presented as a young kid as this, just this victorious, this kind of, I mean, it's put on a little bit of a pedestal. I mean, saw as a good thing, that God's victorious, that all this is happening. But I, on the outside looking in, this is probably one of those passages that people struggle with. God's commanding his people over and over to wipe people out with no survivors. That's not easy for people to come to terms with on the outside looking in. If you're on the winning side, you think, woo, right? We get a little bit excited. But let's face reality a little bit. This is a gruesome story. I want to start with that because it's easy to pass over the story and feel like, oh yeah, God's given the promised land over, but the way that it's done is not pleasant. And I want to talk about that because I feel like it's easy to miss that and to not think about it. And I think it's meant to be thought about a little bit because we've talked about it in the past. This is a judgment story, impartiality. Yes, they're taking hold of the promised land, and this is like the first step. But it's also in a way that we have to think about a little bit. Because God, and this is, I remember Jason talked about it, and I don't remember what sections he was teaching over or what units he was teaching over, but he talked about the judgment side, and I think that's he's in his what he was given to teach about. He got to talk a little bit about the thought process of people of, well, if God's really a good God, then everybody's going to go to heaven. That's just not how it's presented. And I want to take us back. Oh, yeah. Did you come alone or did you bring company? Logan's here. I want to go back to Genesis because these are the Canaanite people. It's going to be in chapter 9. I'm going to start in verse 20. Noah began to be a man of the soil, and he planted the vineyard. He drank of the wine and became drunk and lay uncovered in his tent. And Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his two brothers outside. Then Shem and Japheth took a garment, laid it on both their shoulders, and walked backward and covered the nakedness of their father. Their faces were turned backwards, and they did not see their father's nakedness. When Noah awoke from his wine and knew what his youngest son had done to him, he said, "Cursed be Canaan. A servant of servants shall he be to his brother." He also said, "Blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem, and let Canaan be his servant. May God enlarge Japheth, and let him dwell in the tents of Shem, and let Canaan be his servant." This goes way back. But what I want us to read is, and what I want us to listen to, is there is judgment. Whether that's comfortable or not for us is kind of up to what side we pick. But there is judgment, and it's going to happen. And these stories that have judgment written in them are always uncomfortable. And I think that's a good thing. They're not meant to be comfortable. God, I don't think God writes these things lightly. I don't think God does these things lightly, because at the end of the day, what is he doing? He's destroying his own creation. He's destroying people he made in the image of himself, and I don't think that's a light subject. No matter who it is, no matter what it is, I just think there's a weight and a heftiness that comes along with that that we need to read into and be understanding when people have questions. Because this is one of the biggest questions you'll get. This is something that even in the midst of the church, people struggle with, is the Old Testament. Oh, we're just going to preach out of the New Testament. Oh, we're just going to. It's all the same guy. It's all the same God. It's all the same story. And what we should be reading is, and here's always been my opinion, I'm going to say it's an opinion, but I think it's right, is we should read the Bible under the presumption that it all goes together. Because if we read it that way, it fits. If you take these little snippets and you split them apart and you read it to tear it apart, you can do that. But you can also, and here's the flip side, you can also read it as one story put together, the same God who is unchanging, and it also makes sense. You have to pick which side you're going to be on. Because at the end of the day, what the Bible is presented is the Word of God. And it should be all together. I blew him off for maybe 40 minutes the other day because I was having a phone conversation on my way into work with one of the guys that works with us. And there's questions, right? We can read it and get two totally different things. Not about the main things, and that's where I encourage us, keep the main thing, as Kevin says, or whatever preacher you heard that from. Keep the main thing. And at the end of the day, the main thing is God sent his son to die for us so that we could have a relationship with us. There's nothing that's going to contradict that biblically. We like to argue over the little things, right? I'm a victim of it. That 40-minute conversation was argument over little things, right? And so it happens. And I think those conversations are important because partially it's how you're portraying God. So I do think it's an important thing to grab a hold of and to be curious about. I think God made us curious for a reason. You should want to know these things. That's part of the draw, the lure. But when we read things like this, it's most of the time things that the church kind of likes to leave out a lot of the time, or present it to the kids as, hey, this is just a victorious moment for God. Which, yes, it's a victorious moment for God, because when we read it, whose name goes out to all the people? It's God's, right? After Jericho and Ai, which is the next little section, after Jericho and Ai, there's some discussion among the next cities through the Promised Land, and they fear God. They realize that this God is something, a force to be reckoned with, a real, they're coming face to face with reality of who God is. And biblically, I mean, there's every biblical story, and I didn't read the next one. Let me see, so that I don't spoil anything. Now, hopefully y'all have read the Bible before, so I'm going to spoil it anyway. We're going to get into it a little more next week, but after Ai, there's a group of people that deceive Joshua. Why? Because they've come face to face with God, they've heard this, and what are they going to do? They're going to go deceive Joshua so that their people won't be slaughtered. And due to that, their people get accepted into the Israelite community. Joshua does say, hey, you're going to be woodcutters and water drawers. And that's the curse put upon you for deceiving us. But at the same time, they recognize this power and they surrender to it. And that is given grace throughout the Bible. We read these stories. So I'm going to go ahead and get started. We're going to be in Joshua. I'm going to skip through part of Joshua 5. Because it's about circumcision. Them circumcising the younger people that had never been circumcised before they pass into land. I'm going to start in verse 10. While the people of Israel were encamped at Gilgal, they kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month, in the evening on the plains of Jericho. And the day after the Passover, on that very day, they ate of the produce of the land, unleavened cakes and parched grain, and the manna ceased the day after they ate of the produce of the land. And there was no longer manna for the people of Israel, but they ate the fruit of the land of Canaan that year. Oh, that's probably a really exciting time to finally be eating something different. This subtitle, I want us to pay attention to the commander of the Lord's army. When Joshua was by Jericho, he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man was standing before him with his drawn sword in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said to him, "Are you for us or for our adversaries?" And he said, "No, but I am the commander of the army of the Lord. Now I have come." And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshiped and said to him, "What does my Lord say to his servant?" I want us to focus on that and chew on that a little bit. Are you for us or our adversaries? What's his response? Neither. I'm God's guy. I'm the commander of the Lord's army. He's about to be taken into battle, and whether that's comforting for him or not comforting, probably comforting for him, because he's following the will of the Lord. He's like, I'm not on y'all's side. I'm not on the opposition side. I'm on God's side. And what I want us to take from that and chew on a little bit is when it comes to the judgment that I've been talking about at previously, just a few minutes ago, we see story after story God bringing judgment of his own people, don't we? This is not a... God is a just God. There's no way around it. There's no separation or automatic bid in. Sorry, I got the college football playoffs on my head. There's no automatic bid in. It's hey, you either are or you aren't. And the Lord is just in all cases. He's not going to treat me different than Kevin, than you, than anybody in this room. The Lord is just, and justice will come. That's part of God being God. If he was not a just God, would there be any point of us being here? I mean, if it was really a flip of a coin, is there any point in us sitting here? No. That's what makes our God different. He is just. How far does that go? All the way. From me to my son, to Kevin, to my mom, to my brother, to Zane McCoy. Is he still in Korea? To a guy we know in Korea. To all the little Korean kids that he's getting the opportunity to teach. To all, I mean, It's widespread. Justice is justice, and that's part of God. God is, we paint this picture of just this merciful, wonderful, merciful Savior. Correct. But there's another side, and that we can't get around, and it's the justice that God brings. And when we read this story, which in chapter 6 it starts, there's gruesome words. But when y'all talked with Monty, we learned about someone who escaped this justice. Not escaped it, was dealt justice, just was on the right side of justice. And is Rahab. And this is her, she gets saved in chapter 6. So we're going to read chapter 6. Now Jericho was shut up inside of and outside because of the people of Israel. None went out and none came in. And the Lord said to Joshua, "See, I have given Jericho into your hand, with its king and mighty men of valor. You shall march around the city, and all the men of war going around the city once. Thus shall you do for 6 days. 7 priests shall bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. On the 7th day you shall march around the city 7 times. And the priests shall blow the trumpets. And when they make a long blast with a ram's horn, when you hear the sound of the trumpet, then all the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city will fall down flat, and the people shall go up, everyone straight before him." So Joshua, son of Nun, called the priests and said to them, "Take up the ark of the covenant, and let 7 priests bear 7 trumpets of ram's horn before the ark of the Lord." And he said to the people, "Go forward, march around the city, and let the armed men pass on before the ark of the Lord." And just as Joshua had commanded the people, the 7 priests bearing 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the Lord went forward, blowing the trumpets, with the ark of the covenant of the Lord following them. The armed men were walking before the priests who were blowing the trumpets, and the rear guard was walking after the ark, while the trumpets blew continually. But Joshua commanded the people, "You shall not shout or make your voice heard, neither shall any word go out of your mouth until the day I tell you to shout. Then you shall shout." So he caused the ark of the Lord to circle the city, going about it once, and they came into the camp and spent the night in the camp. Then Joshua rose early in the morning, and the priests took up the ark of the Lord, and the 7 priests bearing 7 trumpets, ram's horns, before the ark of the Lord walked on, and they blew the trumpets continually, and the armed men were walking before them, and the rear guard was walking after the ark of the Lord, while the trumpet blew continually. And the second day they marched around the city once and returned into camp. So they did for 6 days. On the 7th day they rose early at the dawn of day and marched around the city in the same manner 7 times. It was only on that day that they marched around the city 7 times. And at the 7th time, when the priest had blown the trumpets, Joshua said to the people, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the city. And the city and all that is within it shall be devoted to the Lord for destruction. Only Rahab the prostitute and all who are with her in her house shall live, because she hid the messengers whom we sent. But you keep yourselves from the things devoted to destruction, lest when you have devoted them, you take any of the devoted things and make the camp of Israel a thing for destruction and bring trouble upon it. But all silver and gold and every vessel of bronze and iron are holy to the Lord. They shall go into the treasury of the Lord." So the people shouted, and the trumpets were blown. As soon as the people heard the sound of the trumpet, the people shouted a great shout, and the wall fell down flat. So the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they captured the city. Then they devoted all in the city to destruction, both men and women, young and old, oxen, sheep, and donkeys, with the edge of the sword. But to the 2 men who had spied out the land, Joshua said, "Go into the prostitute's house and bring out from there the woman and all who belong to her, as you swore to her. So the young men who had been spies went in and brought out Rahab and her father and mother and brothers and all who belonged to her. And they brought all her relatives and put them outside of the camp of Israel, and they burned the city with fire and everything in it. Only the silver and gold and the vessels of bronze and of iron they put in the treasury of the house of the Lord. But Rahab the prostitute and her father's household and all who belonged to her, Joshua saved alive. And she had lived in Israel to this day because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. Joshua laid an oath on them at the time, saying, "Cursed before the Lord be the man who rises up and rebuilds the city Jericho. In the cost of his firstborn shall he lay its foundation, and at the cost of his youngest son shall he set up its gates." So the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame was in all the land. The next story we have is Ai. And we'll get to that next week. But that's not necessarily an easy passage to read, right? But what I want to say, and I think this is part of reading the Bible as a whole. When Abram was interceding at Sodom and Gomorrah, what was his negotiation? He started out the wrong way, right? But he went high and then started to back up a little bit, all the way down to five righteous souls. I think we're supposed to read this, and this is, again, Hunter's opinion, but if you read the Bible, there's word phrases, and there's, because we're outside of the Torah now. The first five books, this is number six, but the first five books, most of these kids had mostly memorized, at least story for story and paraphrasing, which is incredible. And when you get these similar instances, I think it's to call back on what has been prior. And with the Abram story, he's negotiating with God. If there's five righteous men, are you really going to destroy this, the whole city, for five righteous? We have the Noah story. He saves the righteous among his time. We have all these stories that are falling back to if there's righteousness, if there's a righteous family or a righteous group of people, does God destroy that with the rest? Not historically speaking at this point. And so I'm not saying that's easier pill to swallow. But what I'm saying is God's judgment is just. Over and over, when there's an intercessor, you see it in Moses too, but when there's an intercessor, what's their favorite thing to point out? Well, if there's a righteous person, when you're in trouble, but you did one thing good, what do you like to point out? The one thing good, right, is, hey, I just did this with my wife last night. She got onto me. I know I've been leaving my cups everywhere, but I've been picking up my clothes, right? And so that's just human tendency, right? That's our viewpoint of negotiating, is we get into these bad situations, and then Moses says, hey, if there's... Because when God's talking to Moses, what does he say? He says, Moses, I'm going to kill them all. I'm going to wipe them off the face of the earth, and through you I will bring up a nation. Moses is like, well, I mean... What if, right? And he says, and he kind of puts God's character in, not into check, because God remains the same, but there's this interesting picture where it's almost like Moses and God are just in his head, and it's a conversation between God and himself, which you get this picture of Moses saying, hey, But do you really, I mean, what are the optics on that? What is that going to look like for everybody on the outside looking in? That you brought your own people into the wilderness just to destroy them. What is that? I mean, how is that going to look? And we see this over and over, this repetition of God taking out the righteous. God pulling out the righteous when his judgment is dealt harshly. Which in the Old Testament is frequent. And I think that's what people have such a hard time with. The next story we're going to go into is just as uncomfortable. I don't think it talks much about Achan. So we're going to talk about Achan. Yeah. I appreciate you bringing up the Passover. That's. Do you ever read the Bible or the Old Testament and go, I really don't feel like God's chosen people are his chosen people? And I think it's because we get. And Romans talks about it. That's one of the guy I talked to's favorite verses, that all of Israel is not Israel. So what's the separation? I mean, they've got the bloodline, they've got the heritage, they've got the lineage, they've got all this stuff that says, this should be God's chosen, you should be one of God's chosen. What's the difference? Is God's just across the board, just as the Passover? Whether people put blood over the post or not is what's going to save their firstborn, no matter who you're at. That's why I like starting with this encounter with the commander of the Lord's army. It's because he says, I'm not on your side or the other side. I'm on God's side. What does that mean? There's maybe some of y'all who aren't part of your side, right? And that should be, I mean, that's why there's just not a punch your ticket and go. There's not a, hey, I'm a Jew, punch my ticket and go. Hey, I'm this. Hey, I'm that. It's, hey, do you actually have a relationship with God? hey, when God looks at you, what's the only thing that he's going to look for? His son. When he looks down, does he see his son? Or does he see Hunter? Because if he sees Hunter, I'm in trouble. Because Hunter's done a lot of messed up stuff in his life. It's not even about the quantity. Hunter's done one messed up thing in his life. Everyone falls short of the glory of God. What does God need to look down and see is his son. And I think that's where we get twisted off in certain parts, is sometimes we think, I'm doing pretty good, right? And we miss the part of, hey, it doesn't matter what Hunter's doing. It doesn't matter whether I have not sinned in a week. It doesn't matter whether I haven't struggled with some struggles in a month. It matters what God looks down and sees. It matters whether I have a relationship with Christ. And I think you see, have you ever wondered, I don't know, this is how my head works. Have you ever wondered when Rahab gets pulled out, or some of these instances where God, somebody comes face to face with God and they choose God, and they're not part of this per se chosen people, and they get brought into the Israelite camp. Have you ever wondered what the Israelites thought? Have you ever been in a situation where you're like, all right, well, I put in the work and this guy's just riding on my coattails? Have you ever been in that spot and kind of looked down on somebody and because they didn't do this or they didn't do that? And Rahab's coming in as a sinner in a profession that nobody respects, that is so far from godly. And she's now part of the chosen people. You ever sit there and be like, man, if I was an Israelite and I thought, man, I'm a do-gooder, and she came into my camp and she's in the tent next to me, would I be frustrated? Possibly, but it's because of this misinterpretation of the chosen, right? It's part of Israel's not even Israel. What the chosen's talking about is the people who make the choice, right? What the chosen's talking about is the people who come face to face with God and say, wow, that is the God. And I'm going to devote my life from whatever point, whether that's been living as a prostitute or whether that has been been raised in the church your whole life, whatever point that is for XYZ person, when they come face to face with God, and whether you're raised in the church or not, you'll know when you come face to face with God, right? I would say a lot of people, just like the guy I talked to at work, come face to face with God after they're baptized. And that may also be an uncomfortable part, but what he says, and I believe it, is he was baptized at a young age. Kevin's had him working for him since he was 18 years old. This is not a kid that reflected God very well until he was probably 24-ish. I think that's what he says, is when he was saved. He came face to face with God and went, wow, boy, am I off. And so these people that come face to face with God and choose God, choose to pursue relationship and listen to what he says, think that's what we're talking about when we're talking about a chosen people. Because time after time, God is inviting these people outside of the per se chosen into the camp of the Israelites. Right. Yeah, that's a great side note. Not only is he just saying, hey, you can come stay in our camp, he's saying, hey, the Lord Messiah is going to come from you. Wow. Right? That's incredible. So chew on that, but I guess you've already buzzed me twice, huh? So we'll try to wrap it up. Think about that as we go. In both instances, and certain things are going to hit certain people differently because we just tried to squeeze a whole lot into 30-ish minutes. Whether it's you struggle with the fact that God, and this is somebody who went to Blue Haven. You know, you hear it a lot if you're talking to a non-believer that knows glimpses and snippets of the Bible, because they're typically taught the glimpses and the snippets that are going to try to contradict Christ and who he really is. And so you're taught these execution stories, right? Here in a little bit, and I'm not sure if they're going to talk about it, but y'all should really read the next couple chapters of Joshua. There's an instance where Joshua has some of his leaders stand on the necks of kings before he slaughters them. Bull. Uncomfortable stuff, right? And things that we look at as just gruesome and brutal. But whether what you're needing or whether what you're questioning is that really justice, chew on it. Let's talk about it. Come with questions next week, because this is going to be a theme portrayed throughout the next probably couple years that it's going to be brought up over and over, or whether it's the stance of, man, I have done too many bad things to be in God's camp, right? We see Rahab, part of the lineage of Christ. She's done a lot of bad things, but when she came face to face with God, she chose wisely. Whether that's what you're struggling with. We could talk about all these things for probably hours. But I challenge y'all to pick something out, because there's stuff that I struggle with in here. And that's part of the reason I like teaching classes. It makes you chew on that kind of stuff. It makes you grab a hold of these super difficult things and struggle with them and wrestle with them. And I think that's what we're called to do. The Bible is probably the furthest thing from a comfortable book that you're going to read. And that's a good thing. It should push us. It should challenge us. But struggle with something. Wrestle with something. This isn't meant to be an easy read, an easy walk with God. I had to tell Jaden stuff about myself that she probably struggled with at inception. This is relationship. It's life being played out in front of us so that we can learn how to live better, learn how to reflect Christ better. So thank y'all for being here. Appreciate y'all being here. We'll see you again next week.